Hi, I'm Sam Ben Ruby from the Grape Nation on the Heritage Radio Network. We're the guys that bring wine to the people. This is Heritage Radio Network on tour. We're broadcasting live from the Le Creuset podcast studio at Charleston Wine and Food. Go to heritageradionetwork.org/Charleston2019 to see our full interview schedule. Thank you to Le Creuset and the Julia Child Foundation for making Heritage Radio Network on tour at Charleston Wine and Food possible. All right, we got a great show. I don't want to toot my horn, but this may be the most fun show of the weekend, okay?
All right.
We got some cool guys here. We got a lot of wine. Hey, do we have a corkscrew?
I think we got a corkscrew.
All right, so let's get this stuff open.
Nice.
All right. So welcome to the Charleston Wine and Food Festival, our Grape Nation edition. We have a very special show. It's our Sunday Psalm show. It's probably the best and brightest, most talented, coolest wine people in Charleston. Matt Tunstall is the proprietor of Stems and Skins in Park Circle in North Charleston. He was named a James Beard Award semifinalist for Outstanding Wine Program for this year.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
Thank you, buddy.
His wine bar restaurant, Stems and Skins, was one of the first natural wine bars to open in Charleston, promoting freaky ferments. We have sommelier Femi Oyedarin and Miles White. They are the co-owners of Graft Wine Shop on King Street in Charleston. Both have come through the Charleston restaurant scene, and along with Matt, have created a true wine destination. These guys just celebrated your first year, right?
Yeah.
Congratulations,
absolutely.
All right, welcome to the show, everybody.
Thank you very much.
Let's get started. Let's dig into this.
All right, so
Femi and Miles, you just celebrated your first anniversary. Tell people what you're doing at Graft, you know, what's going on, what your vision was, and how you're pulling it off.
Femi and I have been friends for a super long time, and we kind of came together under one vision, and we became friends because we are both kind of enjoy the same things, and I think a lot of that revolves around.
When did your paths cross?
We met about 10 years ago.
Where?
At the Charleston Grill. We got hired our first restaurant jobs together.
Okay.
We were food runners at the Charleston Grill. And we became fast friends, and we kind of independently got into wine.
I think we really got along well because we had the same taste in music at the restaurant.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I was like, all right, you're cool. I can hang out with you.
Well, Femi was doing a lot of music at the time. He was producing and bringing really cool people into town, almost like a little ahead of his time. And it was all music that I was really into. So naturally, like, that was a really common finder for us. I was only 19
Miles
at the time, so wine
And both
like,
you guys
Miles
worked
actually,
for Rick.
Yeah. And at the time when I was doing music, Miles had actually introduced me to two bands that had become like the two of the biggest like artists that I worked with at the time.
How?
I never heard about them until Miles kind of gave me the heads up. He'd be like, hey, you need to book these people. And I'd be like, sure.
Which ones?
Yeah.
So
which ones were those? I was like, two.
You introduced me to Two Fresh.
Two Fresh. And,
let's jump.
Yeah, and Bert Peterson.
Let's jump forward. Right. Yeah. So you guys meet at Charleston Place.
Yep.
The restaurant. You guys work under Rick Rubel's tutelage. About a year ago. I mean, you're good grand friends for 10 years already. About a year ago, and probably some previous planning to that, you decided to what? Pack it in and...
It was about 3 years ago,
It was honestly. About 3 years ago you started planning it?
Yeah, it was about 3 years ago,
I had just finished working Harvest in Oregon, and my whole family's here, and Femi, I think it kind of reached a point with his career. I'll obviously let him talk, but I think he had kind of hit a ceiling here in Charleston, and... We call it like the fateful lunch, where we had lunch one day with my father.
That's where you plotted everything out?
Yeah. We had a lunch at actually Bull Street Gourmet, which was owned by his partner.
Nice. Right.
And it was me, him, and his father, and we were just talking about, you know, what moves to make. And, you know, Miles was trying to figure out what he wanted to do. He's a big family man. I think he wanted to hang out with his family as much as possible, looking for an excuse to do so. And we both just started talking about wine in Charleston and where it was at and what we wanted from it. And, you know, it was a long conversation that kind of ended in the resolution that we wanted to create something together.
Right. And you had to have a vision of what you wanted to execute or what you thought Charleston needed. And in a nutshell, what was that?
Well, you know, Miles and I have had such a great time over the years, you know, just hanging out, being friends, and drinking wine and sharing wine with a lot of our friends.
So extend that vibe.
And, yeah, and the way we do it is, you know, it's, you know, usually like, you know, we put on some, you know, loud rap music that we love and, you know, we crack open bottles and we have a good time and, you know, it's never been about, you know, the wine has always been great and, you know, our friends don't necessarily always know what they're drinking, but they love it. And, you know, it's the company that we really enjoy, you know, great wine accentuates great company.
But you create the environment for
that. We wanted to create a vibe like that.
And I think this past year has been, there's been a lot of things that have been really difficult, but at the end of the day, like the program that we're trying to run is amazingly simple.
Right. Nobody said it was going to be easy. And Matt, it's been, what, about 3 years?
Just over 3 years, yeah.
3 years. Congratulations.
Thank you.
Congratulations on the James Beard nomination.
Thank you very
much.
That's
a big deal. And I don't know if it's called changes, but you're doing some things there. I think you're taking a more serious posture towards food. You brought a chef in? Or
we did, yes.
Is that a fair description?
Yeah. We'd always had, you know, wine-friendly kind of snacky hors d'oeuvre kind of vibe.
Right.
Food.
Cheese, sliced Iberico ham.
Some smaller plates, but the 10 seafood has been doing well, has always done well for us and great with wines. But we just noticed we were missing a lot of people that wanted more substantial meals to go when they came in. So they'd come in for a glass of wine and then they'd go for dinner. Or a lot of people come after, have dinner in the neighborhood and have something, digestif or something along those lines. So we just wanted to try to capture more people for dinner and kind of spread more of, you know, that wine-friendly food, Mediterranean vibe food that we have been known for.
And the menu's up and running?
Menu's up and running, yeah, for about 6 months. Yeah, for about 6 months now or so. Mm-hmm.
All right, so we all agree Matt's somewhat of a natural wine evangelist, right? Is that fair to say?
I think he's a good wine evangelist.
I mean, yeah.
Wine evangelist and natural, and you guys are supportive of, sustainable, low-intervention wine guys.
Yeah, I think even when I was saying Femi was ahead of his time with music, like, if Matt was way ahead of his time, and I think luckily, like, it has caught on like wildfire and in a way that I think is super representative of what's going on in this town, because I think natural wine gets tossed around a lot. And
as a term, natural wine,
yeah, sure.
I'm not
exactly
sure that's
and
the term.
I think Matt, but Femi and myself kind of share a similar vision of, like,
absolutely,
that doesn't matter to us. A lot of the times the wines that we enjoy are made that way, because if you make them well, it's a lot harder to
without
make.
Without singling them out.
Yeah. It's a harder product to make. Yeah. And I think usually those people are a little more passionate and make a better product, and they just happen to be lower intervention.
So if we had to call it natural wine or call it the natural wine movement, the three of you guys are instrumental in bringing it forward to Charleston. You know, just the way you curate your list, you know, the way you promote it and all that. Does the market get it? Are they ready for it? Are they embracing it? I mean, are we there yet? How does that work?
Very much so. I think I try to shy away from the terms that with undefinitive kind of terms like natural wine and things like that, just because I think we were using the right terminology here earlier, just about wines that we're passionate about. I don't have to drink perfect wine,
right?
You know, and I'm okay with a little bit of bacteria or VA or something on those lines, as long as it adds to the uniqueness of the wine itself. I think that when you get young people or passionate owners about a beverage, your guests know they're coming into something where they can learn something, where they should try something new, and where they can get behind things that we're excited about. And that's, I think, been the best way to spread the message so far.
You feel the same way, guys?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely. I think that, you know, as a retailer and as someone that sells, you know, at the bar, I think the intent is the most important thing. And, you know, I think that for us, what we try to communicate to our guests or our customers is that we're looking for well-made wines, and, you know, and we're honest about the wines that we procure for our place, and I think that, you know, we pay attention to the winemaking methods, farming, etc., and ultimately what ends up on the shelf is a combination of wines that, you know, we found to meet whatever kind of proprietary standards that we have for winemaking. I think that should just be something that's held across every restaurant, every wine bar, every retailer, that there's some standard for the consumer to kind of understand.
There's there starts to be stories behind the winemakers and the way they do it. So we have about 3 bottles of open wine. During the course of the show, we'll talk about the wines, and hopefully by the end of the show, we won't remember any of the wines. But I want to ask you guys this because you're all uniquely qualified, because you all came from pretty big restaurant programs. Husk, you know, Charleston Place. I mean, those have been leaders in the market. Is it harder to build a small wine list and curate it, or harder to maintain a big wine list? Like you...
I think we have a unique situation here.
Like Fig, you know, Fig is the reigning champion.
Absolutely.
And she has a small list.
Absolutely.
So is it harder to get that killer small list, or is it...
And that's
harder for a guy like Rick to have the big list. What's your feeling
on
wine list?
I think, you know, if you talk to Rick, Rick would certainly, you know, all the difficulty in creating a small list, because you really do have to have more intent when you place something there. Like, what are you trying to, you know, to communicate by having that wine there? But I also think that there's a great deal of difficulty to managing, you know, a really large list that they have at Charleston Place, you know.
And, so that's the hard part.
And keeping it eclectic, and, you know, and when you have, you know, like a place at that hotel, you have so many different types of consumers that come from, whether local or out of town. So Rick has to really kind of, you know, please a lot of palates. And I think he does a phenomenal job doing that. And if you can kind of maneuver as stealthily as someone like Rick Rubel, I think that, I mean, the difficulty there is, you know, is huge. But, I mean, us working through a smaller, you know, selection of wines, et cetera, we really do have to be very choice about what ends up on the shelf.
But so. You're always rotating.
Yeah.
Seasonal, right?
Yeah.
Well, I think, and Charleston's kind of unique in that we are super lucky to get allocated some wines that people fight over in much bigger markets, and people want their wines here.
There's a decent distribution base.
Oh my God,
there's some passionate guys down here that have
brought
wines.
And like to run a small list.
Fighting for them, yeah.
To run a small list. And to
for
like
guys like you that they know will take it.
That's to get access to these wines, it's like you some wines come through and you might not have room for it, but you kind of make room.
Do you feel any frustrations, I mean, with a smaller list? Is there more you would like to put on?
Perhaps in the past, but I want to say that there's been such a resurgence of, not a resurgence per se, but just such an influx of great wine people and buyers and importers and distributors that have grown with the pace of business in Charleston. So we've been fighting for a couple of years now for sure. I want to say we're at a point now where we can get a lot of the great wines that we had to really fight for a long time. So now they're starting to show up on the regular.
That makes the lists easier to put together.
Yeah, yeah.
Everything's as important as the last thing.
Yeah, to answer your question about a small list too, I've done both and I enjoyed the big list and all of the relationships that it takes to get those world-class wines consistently. And the organization and all things along those lines. But I'd much rather have a small list these days because it's so much more interactive with you personally and running it and always changing it and things along those lines. And it makes it, I think, easier for the guests to get what you're doing and get have a wine that you are really passionate about. Absolutely.
It's focused in that sense. We're looking at 3 wines on the table. Let's talk about wine number 1. I guess we should start with the sparkling. Just quickly give me a descript of what we're drinking.
Yeah.
And everybody in the room, Matt, Kat, Alan, everybody, just grab a glass and start pouring, all right? Don't be afraid.
For
just
sure.
Walk right up. So what are we drinking on the... Miles, you're in the middle of a show. You're not doing service, okay?
Miles, getting up, pouring wine.
Always a service guy.
Yeah, so
the
first
sparkling,
wine,
tell me
we brought,
about that.
Man, we brought some Grimona, certainly one of our favorite Spanish producers. I guess they were formerly a Cava producer, but I think they're leaving the DO. But the wines are remarkable. They've got a lot of history in the region. But this is their Imperial. Wine's been aged for, I think, 60 months on the lees, but it's just beautiful, sparkling wine. No matter the appellation, you can't help but to appreciate this wine. It's beautiful. I thought it'd be great for a day like this.
What are we talking retail? Ballpark. You don't have to be precise.
39, 36. I think 36, 36, So
it's really a high-end quality Spanish sparkler.
I mean,
it's
not
a cava?
It's they're cava, but I believe they're no longer going to be labeling their wines in the cava DO. But the wines are beautiful. Yeah, I mean, this is, I don't know, if you love great champagne, if you just like great sparkling wine, this is a delicious wine.
It's delicious. So that's the Grimona Imperial and all that. The other thing I'm curious about with you guys is all of you guys work the floor. We talked about it a little before, but not why. What's the compulsion where you finally throw your arms up and you go, F it? You know, where you and Miles have been sitting having lunch and we got to get out of here. Is it the hours? Is it fulfilling aspirin? I mean, why do you leave the floor to go in? And ironically, all of you are in, you know, a retail kind of a concept place.
Oh, we haven't left the floor.
Well, we haven't left the floor.
restaurant.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, restaurant floor.
Fine dining where
for
you're working for
fine
someone
dining.
Else.
Yeah, we're not selling entrees.
But you're in retail and you're in service.
Sure.
The hours suck.
Yeah,
I think.
But is it to do your own thing?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a huge part of it. I think with certain restaurants, I think, unfortunately, you know, and this is probably an overgeneralization, but like the industry, there's only so many steps on the ladder you can go up before. And I think a lot of times people are probably underpaid and overworked and underappreciated when you get up that past that level of being on the floor. And there's really only like one avenue you can kind of take. It's either risk it and kind of try and do your own thing or switch industries.
All right.
Is that where you were at?
Yeah, absolutely. I think
you
it was.
You were in a very popular, busy restaurant, good
absolutely.
Wine program. I mean,
absolutely.
What compels you to, is there a moment or it builds up?
I've always wanted to own my own place,
okay.
I thought. And so the whole drive of the career was to learn what not to do.
On other
when
people's
you,
dime.
You get paid for it. Absolutely. But, there was a passion to share what the wines I'm excited about with people. There's a passion to play the music that you want to work to because you're so tired of listening to other people's playlists during service.
Yeah, sure. You know,
you know, create that vibe. Kind
of thing. You know, I think ultimately, you know, what we're all trying to communicate is that I think, and what I love about STEMS as well is that I think the energy needed to change around wine in Charleston. I think that if you came to this town a few years ago, I mean, great places to drink wine. But every place, I think, was very relaxed and, you know, very calm place to drink. And I think that wine can be really exciting, it can be high energy, and we needed something to kind of reflect that because Charleston's a very high energy town. You know, we come in, we're in good spirits, we celebrate.
I think you're being very kind, too,
yeah.
because you described an environment that existed, but that also existed with crappy wines.
Yeah,
I mean,
for sure.
Guys like you and
right,
Matt
exactly.
and Miles that... you know, curated and are bringing wines to people.
Yeah.
So that's an important
But also
thing
it's a different experience because people are coming to town now and they're saying they're going to, you know, all these places that now, you know, in Charleston have great wine, but also great people behind that are selling the wine. So the experience is different because everyone's excited. They're like, we're going to go to Stems, we're going to go to Graft, we're going to go to all these places.
There's destinations. There's destinations now.
It's more handcrafted than it
yeah.
is
yeah.
corporate crafted,
for sure.
perhaps,
it's
or something
so
like that.
It's so cool to hear like people come into Graft and sit at the bar and be like, what are you doing this weekend? They're like, oh, well, you know, we're going to go plan a trip to Stems and Skins and have dinner up there. And it's like people are hearing someone plan their trip around wine in this town. It's mm-hmm. not something you would have heard 5 years ago.
Yeah.
Well, we
Absolutely.
Also have to give Matt a little props. Because you guys opened up a year ago in a very hot neighborhood. I mean, there's a lot of good restaurants. People
right.
are moving.
Super lucky. With
this maniac 3 years ago goes to North Charleston, right? And figures something's going on here. What happened yesterday in Bayou and Park Circle?
St. Patty's Day, drunk fest of 20,000 people.
There were 20,000
really?
People.
Yeah.
Oh, man. That was yesterday?
That was yesterday. Oh,
that's pretty good.
Did you work last night?
All day, yeah, that's right. That's
He's
a good,
like,
that's a good
screw
one.
The festival. I got screw the festival. I got 20,000 people
outside
home
yesterday,
my
right?
door.
You got any Bud Light?
You got one in each hand.
Yeah, I had a green Bud Light yesterday.
Bud Light?
Sorry,
yeah.
I won't tell everybody that.
All right, so we talked about the market. I think this is a good segue. I think you guys are pretty good barometers. In your mind and observations, how has the Charleston market changed? You know, initially in the wine thing, and then just in general, last 3, 5, 10 years, what are you seeing? Are you seeing more sophisticated consumers, overcrowding? I mean, what are the things that resonate with you?
I mean, absolutely. I mean, I think things are great. I say this all the time. I'm thrilled that we have so many great places to talk about wine in Charleston because, you know, one of my favorite people in music is Questlove, and he talked about how the Roots could not succeed without there being a movement of like Mos Def, Erykah Badu, and all these people together, you know, coming up in the game. And it's the same thing with Charleston Wine. You can't just have one person doing wine. You need to have several that are preaching so that people can get with it and see that there's a movement. So Stems, Monarch, Go Cheap Cow, Us, Wine and Company, yeah. You know, et cetera. All these places that are doing, Edna's Oast Exchange, doing these great things with wine is great, because also for restaurants, working at the grill, you know, if I went up to a table, I had 3 minutes to figure out, you know, tell them about Barolo and get them to drink in a wine. But, you know, if there are fantastic retailers that are doing the work during the day, I mean, it makes it so much easier for restaurants to sell great wine. So I really think that really needed the movement that we have going on in Charleston to make sure that people are drinking better wine.
I agree. What changes? I mean, you've created change by moving up north, but what do you see that's changing in the customer, in habits, market?
There's just much more a dynamic aspect to eating and drinking in this town, I think, than there has been a long, long time.
The game Young, bar passion, has gone up.
Absolutely. And I think that the guests know that, and guests, when they're coming in to visit all these great places, they don't sit down and say, hey, I like this, I want to drink this. They say, hey, what are you guys excited about?
And so that's... The nice thing is, if you go into a Monarch or you walk in there, the customers come in with open arms and say,
absolutely,
what should I drink and all
that. Absolutely.
We would want to explore. And like, yeah. I think one of the funniest things that I've noticed is we have these kids, and they got to be in like their late 20s, and somehow they know the exact moment when the Cornelius and No Wines come in.
Love it.
And they call us up and they go, do you guys get these wines in? And we're like, yeah, how'd you know? Like, these just got delivered today, and they'll come and buy all of it. And it's like, how do you, like, know about this super geeky, natural Edna producer, but, like, B, they're going to come in, and they want to buy it all, and they want to drink it all.
So that's
like,
awesome.
I never thought that would happen.
It's the Instagram.
It's like a sneaker drop.
I want to ask you about that audience, but before we do that, let's talk about Laison à Dédé.
Yeah, from...
All right, this, to me, it looks like an orange wine. Break it down for us, man.
Yeah, there's certainly a bit of skin contact here. This is for all of us, one of our favorite producers in the Jura. This is from Jean-Francois Ganevat. And this is a unique wine. There's not vintage, it's the Vin de France. There's about, it's a blend of Gewurztraminer and Savigny from the Jura.
Grapes, man.
Asian barrel for about 7 years, blended with some, I think, skin contact Gewurz from their friends in Alsace. It's a pretty delicious wine. It's got lots of texture, flavor. It's super complex.
Let's just spend a minute on it. Just, you guys are the experts. On the nose, what are we getting out of this?
This wine is extremely unique in the best way. It's almost...
What do you get, Maddie?
Fruit-wise, I don't know, pineapple, kind of tropical aspect to it.
It's
sort of
like,
exotic.
Yeah. Does that follow?
Yeah, I've sensed texture is more forthcoming than any other part of the wine.
I get a lot of candied peach. Yeah. There's some, you know, orange rind. Honey, chamomile.
Like,
what do you pair this with?
Man, I think a good day in Charleston with Sam and Ruby.
So if you had to go be on a good day in Charleston and get food, what kind of food on a good day in Charleston?
There's a tent like... on the other side of the festival here that has basically just like torn apart a wheel of Parmesan, and if I could grab some of that.
That would be good, right? Yeah. The sharpness of the cheese.
Chucrut, smoked meats.
Yeah. Now, I think that'd be terrific. Yeah, yeah.
Is there a consensus among us? As Matt would say, this is a freaky ferment of the group.
This is a really good wine.
This is a really good wine. You know?
But here's what I'm afraid of. And when you talk about real wine, natural wine, I think a lot of people would love this, and I think some people would be freaked out by it.
Absolutely.
For sure.
Absolutely, yeah.
100%.
I mean, it's and that
that's
type
like,
of wine.
That's
so
just
you
the way it goes.
Servers and curators have to read
the guest.
The guest. Yeah. Well, this may be a home run or maybe a punch in the head.
Yeah, there's probably nothing in between for this wine. You love it or hate it, probably.
I think when people come to your spot, they expect... in a good way to like drink more wines that are like off the beaten path and maybe something that is a little bit different.
So
and
they're
when
expecting.
They come,
they're,
and,
they're
and,
ready for
you that. Know, we are in a more, we're probably in a spot where we get a lot of overflow from people that are dining at Leon's and Melfi's and Little Jack's. And we have a lot of people that come in that want to drink something more traditional, but we do this one orange wine by the glass and everybody wants to taste it.
Yeah.
And it's amazing because it's there's never a middle ground. It's always like, wow, this is one of the coolest things I've ever had, or wow, this is one of the worst things I've ever had.
Right.
It's like, okay, cool. I'm glad I got to try
it's
it.
It's all in or get the
F out
of here.
We can find the barometer of like what you like. But it's all in this. It's all for the good fun of like having people try new things. And it's like, if you want to taste it, I'm happy to.
But another example too of a producer that's, I don't know, maybe never been in Charleston before, and that'd be last year. So Ganavat wines just came.
These wines, they don't. You don't like. I mean, these ones aren't around.
Outside of Charleston, he's a rock star.
So absolutely. It's like, yeah.
Happy to bring a guy in and have a tour in this market.
He's never available, so it's it's great to share.
And you're the guys that are going to get it.
Yeah.
Miles, you alluded to this before. Charleston's definitely a college town, not big drinkers because of legal age, but it's a young town. I mean, is it a millennial town? Are millennials shaping the market, you know, as far as eating habits, wine habits? I mean, do you feel a millennial touch to the market?
I don't think we get a lot of college kids. I mean,
forget the college kids, but it is a college town.
No, but that's the thing about, I think that's the thing about when you get into this whole, you could have a whole another podcast about social media influence on wine and
I would love to
because like wines come into the spotlight and then a month later they go away. And
how'd you know my next question?
Yeah.
But talk to me about how is the market getting younger? Are they millennials? Do they spend money? Are they interested? Do they give a shit about the story?
100%. People, I think the millennials, i.e. people younger than us, they want an experience. They want to be a part of it and they want to learn and they want, you know, it's not like they want to be taken care of hand and foot. They want to actually be a part of it. And I think that's hugely important to why all of our places are successful, because it's not like, hey, come in, we're going to take care of you. You don't have to think about a thing. They're curious. They want to know about it. And they've read about certain wines that are happening in certain bigger markets. And it allows us to experiment a lot more. And it's like people are open to trying new things. It's like, you like Sauvignon Blanc? I don't have one by the glass, but I've got something that you might not have had, and you're probably going to like it.
I agree that people definitely want the experience, millennials, and I think they're more about not trophy wines or rare wines. They're more about the story behind, like Ganavat is probably, you know, a good story and a good wine. I mean, do you agree? I mean, that's your existence in a way.
Absolutely. They're like we mentioned earlier, that's the perfect guests for trying something new. They come in excited. They know enough to be dangerous and it's unique producers and stuff like that. And they're up for whatever you're excited about. They're going to definitely try it.
And that's definitely age appropriate, right?
Yeah, I mean,
because old farts like me who want to experiment but like the other stuff, they come in more with, you know, open arms and all.
Absolutely.
Of that.
Yeah.
You agree, Fem? Fem, you agree? I mean, millennials, are they affecting your market? Is it a big customer?
I think, you know, I mean, I think that, you know, we can talk all we want about a good story, but a good story is useless if the wine isn't great. So
well,
I think that
we leave it to you guys to find the story and the winemaker and the good
and
wine.
And hopefully the wine is good. But I think, I think ultimately a lot of people that we talk to, millennials, they're looking for good wine. They're looking for good wine. It's also, I mean, value is huge. You know, that's something that we've seen in the retail sector, you know, that people want good wine with a good story, but they don't want to spend a ton of money on wine. I mean, I'm not speaking for everyone, but saying a lot of people that we encounter, they want wine that's affordable and delicious and also has a good story. So we need to, you know, make sure that we're getting those people good wine.
My friends who are starting to have a little more disposable income, they want four bottles of something they never had that are all different and they can try new things rather than having like two bottles of something that's cool and recognizable.
Totally
and
agree.
Some baller.
Yeah. It's like,
I mean,
and it's
millennials
cool
could buy two bottles of bourbon for one bottle of single malt.
Exactly.
And so you could buy, you know, some good wines and all of that. We did mention social media and millennials, social media. You guys are very active.
Yeah.
Has social media created an opportunity for you to create image, launch the business? I mean,
absolutely.
How do you use it? Is it important?
Yeah, I mean, we use the hell out of social media.
You guys nail it, too.
I mean, we have a good time.
You ain't bad.
Miles and I, we have a good
Tell
time.
Tell me how. I mean, what you do and
man,
what works.
We just try to relate to people. That's all it is.
I mean, you throw a post out and you get 180 likes and you throw another one and you get 500?
Yeah, that's so
you know,
okay.
You look at it and go, wait, what did I say or do?
No,
what
it's,
works?
Someone's figured out. It's like anytime that someone's like, if Femi's face is in it or if my face is in it, like, or if it's like a bottle of like
people.
A cool, you know, if we had the coolest wine possible and it's like this beautiful picture, you know, if someone likes it, they're going to like it. But like if it could be, I could be holding up a, like I said, a green Bud Light. And if it's me and like a jean overalls that's going to get like...
5 and...
Yeah.
At the end of the day, you know, we understand that a lot of people that we talk to, that we see every day, they don't have the same fascination for wine that Miles and I do. So whenever we post, we keep that in mind and we try to allude to something that they can still relate to if they can't relate to that specific wine. Because when you're posting pictures of wines on Instagram, people can't taste labels. They can just see
the
art.
Can't go too, you can't go too inside either.
Yeah. And they can't see the art.
If I were to do a post with this bottle, I'm sure a handful of people that would recognize it would be like, wow, that's really cool. They're drinking Ganava. And then 90% of our... 90% of the people that
what
see
the
it.
Are,
so yeah. we try to find something in it or around it or around the idea of drinking it that can relate to the 90% of the other people outside of Psalms. Because Psalms are going to see the label. They're like, oh, that one's great. But what about everyone else? How can we connect to them? That's what we try to solve.
99% of the
people that can't be impulsive. It can't be just, you know, a show for you guys.
Yeah.
But I honestly think that there's a good crew of people that at 4 o'clock on Friday afternoon, if you post all the stuff you're excited about that's by the glass for that day, they're going to make their plans right there. They say, oh, I'm going to go out and drink wine there tonight.
So that's immediacy, discovery.
Absolutely. They're making their plans on the weekend based on the wines that might be available at a particular place.
Well, and I think one of the things that we notice all the time, too, and I think this is, again, could be a whole other podcast, is like these wines pop up on Instagram. Like, remember when we had a... the Mamacita come by and we posted a picture of it on our, and then like someone came by, three people came by the day and bought all of it.
This little Pendant from Briande.
Yeah, Briande. Yeah,
shout out to Briande.
Love you. Sorry. Yeah. Incredible wines.
So it could push product for sure, right?
Yeah, but then there's someone, like, I remember when Philippe Tessier came into the market, it was like a bloodbath for these wines. It's not a joke. Like, people were like clawing for these wines and it's just like, it's like the spotlight just like shifts and moves, and the wine never changes because the wine's always incredible, and we always push
what we like
and what's good. Yeah. But it's like, it's what comes in. And
but we're also talking about influencer marketing. The wine could be great, it could be crappy, but the guy holding it has an effect as to what people's interests are.
Yeah. And people get influenced from bigger markets. It's like, what are the kids drinking in Brooklyn? And like,
all you guys have reputations in the market. People look to you for discovery. Like you said, if you do a by the glass, they're like, you know what, we're going to stop by. This guy's got stuff that no one else is getting. Yeah. What, on social media, I mean, is there a platform that seems to work better than others? Is it Instagram? Yeah. Is it Facebook?
Instagram for sure.
I mean, are you gravitating more towards Instagram?
I mean, we barely
Instagram?
Pay attention to Facebook, and I hate to say that, you know, but that's
the only reason we use Facebook is Instagram makes it easy to share.
I will say that a lot of, and I'm sorry, y'all, but I mean, a lot of older people, they follow us on Facebook, so we want to not leave them out, so we post them on Facebook. But I mean, most everything we do is for Instagram.
Yeah.
All right, let's just stay with this for one more minute. Do you guys try to do video, or are you too lazy? Or because the word
too busy.
It's not Instagram works better than anything.
Man, the response on video on Instagram is like so terrible.
It's
appalling. No, not stories are great.
Stories
are great. But whenever we Instagram post videos on our, what is it?
On the post, yeah, not the story.
If I can put my hand below the floor, that's where video.
All right, so that's good intel. So video on the stories, video on the post, not great.
Story.
Video on story.
Great. Yeah.
Have you tracked...
It's unbelievable.
Have you tracked the post and stories? Do stories tend to do better?
Well, we don't really know how they're doing because, you know... When
I
you
think
see,
a lot of people
you,
mindlessly just, like,
yeah,
scroll through
you know,
them.
People mindlessly scroll through them, but, you know, you see whether or not people are paying attention when they comment or if they like something. So
part of me, like, when I actually sit down and try and evaluate all this stuff, it pains me so much because it's like, how has it become that this is the thing? But... it's unbelievable. Like, even, I mean,
gotta play the game.
Full transparency, like, Femi is 100% of why our whatever marketing game we have works, and I don't...
It is your marketing game, or it is our marketing game.
I don't even know the login to the graph password for Instagram, honestly. So it's like, sometimes I'll have a good idea, but most of the time I don't.
Do you have any kind of regiment, or you try to post a certain amount of time, certain days of the week? Like you said, Friday you'll do a BTG by the glass.
Yeah, honestly, I used to have more than I do now. I think that I'm always trying to think of another way to present an aspect of the bar we want to showcase. And so maybe spreading it out from just wine to food stuff to right. music stuff, and just constantly promoting other or all aspects of the bar, well, and not just bottle shots.
That's the hard part, because yeah. I could take a picture of me like jumping in the air with a like something, doing something stupid, and it's gonna get 1,000 likes, or I could take try to like actually do a post that's relevant and informative, and yeah. it doesn't do that well, and it's like. You have to find the happy medium
the
between.
Yeah. Yeah,
I guess you have to do a little of both.
Exactly.
You
yeah.
want to
finding
keep
that
people
happy medium
engaged.
Is difficult.
You want the likes. Yeah. You know, you got to show the cool bottle.
It's all,
and
it's all about figuring out how to do a balance, and that's something that we try to do yeah. every day when we post. We try to figure out the balance of what we're putting out. Are we responsibly representing wine, and are we making it inclusive for people that don't have the same enthusiasm that we share about specific wines?
Do you? Go ahead.
Along the same lines, I think that, I don't know how I'm trying to put this, but I think Instagram has grown so much, especially in the wine world, and like friends and tight colleagues and people that we have like similar tastes to. The majority of, I don't know, if you have 5,000 likes or 5,000 people on Instagram, how many actually live in Charleston? So how many are actually guests of yours?
Right. You're right.
So you have to weigh that too, like right. whether you're actually trying to get people in for the weekend, or you're just kind of defining what your business is about and things along those lines.
If anyone wants to read anything cool, Letty Teague's article in the Wall Street Journal that just came out is
yeah,
all
yeah,
about
a
this.
Good article.
Super
absolutely,
awesome.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. Nailed it.
Do you think you would have similar success, recognition, and even some of the mojo without having social media available to you? Would it be easy to launch Graph, open up Stems and Skins 3 years ago?
I think that it would just be a slower process. I think it just it's exponentially
more
helped.
Democratic and available.
Absolutely. Yeah.
The honest answer is like, yeah, I hope so.
Yeah.
I don't.
Well, people did it before social media.
Yeah, I think absolutely. It would have just taken longer. Like, I think
it just speeds up your ability to reach yeah. more people.
All right, we got to wrap up in a few minutes. I want to cover two more things. Let's talk quickly about the third wine we're drinking. That's Maddie's wine. What do we got here, Matt?
It's delicious, by
it's
the way.
It's the first red.
It's delicious.
Yeah, this is the AOC of Passe du Grand from Georges Lignier. These wines are, this is every day. If you want to drink in Burgundy for a good price every day, Passe du Grand is kind of the AOC to go to.
Speaking of social media, is post a picture of this on your Instagram, because everyone should drink this wine.
I want to take a picture of the wines. I want to take a picture. But it's a Bourgogne. Is this a Lignier from the Lignier family?
Yeah, but this is just their little... This Passe du Grand is what... You know, based on Pinot Noir and some Gamay.
What's
so they're
the,
inexpensive. They're fresh. They're everyday.
What's the retail on this?
21,
wow.
23.
That's
yeah,
great.
Right in there.
You like it?
It's outstanding.
Yeah. You like it?
Yeah.
It's fun little wines.
All right.
Yeah.
For
it's
me,
a way to drink every day in Burgundy, right?
For me, it's the first time I had it.
It's great.
I mean, I'm going home and buying this shit or coming to your place.
I'm about to run off with this bottle.
I mean, I need a case of this, and Alan needs a case
of Matt,
this.
Yeah, Matt, who brings this in, by the way?
Before I let you... What?
I was asking who brings this in.
Rosenthal.
Right, yeah. It's right on the back.
Absolutely.
All right, before I let you guys go, tell me quickly, we'll go around the horn, right now, what winemakers, grapes, regions, varietals, what's exciting you now? You know, and you can't go too deep because I don't have a lot of time, but give me one or two. Is there a grape? Is there a winemaker? I mean, it could be seasonal. It could be what you like. It could be for the store. What's cool? I mean, this is a good example. Femi, you go first.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think for us as retailers, you know, we find a lot of value in pushing people towards Italy. Particularly
where?
For reds, just particularly for reds, all over. I think Italy offers tremendous versatility as far as like, you know, drinking styles of different wine, and also
so that's
for value.
Too general of an answer.
Too general of an answer.
You can keep it general, but for our listeners, I need you to focus in on one or two places.
I'll say, I think Maggie Harrison at Antigua Terra is the
man.
Best winemaker in the world. And if you're listening, I love you, and I hope to talk to you soon. Antigua Terra. Oregon,
nice.
Pinot.
Okay,
you
got
Chardonnay.
That plug in.
Yeah.
Something else.
Well, you know, I just love California. My buddy Hardy Wallace makes tremendous wines. If you are a lover of Morvedra, go
Christ.
For Dirty and Rowdy
you
all
guys
day.
Getting paid here or something? Yeah.
Dan Petrosky, love you, brother.
Dan will be on the show. In,
really,
Massacon.
Nice,
I
mean,
nice.
Yeah. Let me turn to somebody for a real answer to the question.
That was
all right.
Sincere answer. That was.
I didn't
very
say
sincere.
I said real. Matt, tell me about, give me an exciting region, winemaker,
come on,
grape. Just give me something that's happening.
I'll answer
turn my people on to something.
I'll answer the question the same way every time. It's in the Loire Valley. And then
so
the
you're
producers,
a noir first.
Yeah, absolutely. The producers, their neighborhood might change, but it's right in there for sure. So,
so let's
I don't know. It's like Domaine de la Bolivière, Noël Amouratin, Clozel,
okay.
Chidane. Those wines that I could go to.
So
every
we're
day.
Talking Chenin?
Chenin Blanc.
Chidane, I know, is a good Chenin producer.
Yeah, absolutely. Baudry and Chinon.
Did you mention? Right, Chinon.
Yeah.
My answer changes. Alfredo Maestro, Spain.
Miles, you can redeem yourself and jump
there
in.
There he goes.
Jump in.
Come on, give me a favor right now.
No, I was saying, like, you know, the reds from Alfredo Maestro in Spain, those wines are, the value's insane and the wines are great.
Wines.
And
all right.
Yeah.
All right, listen. I want to thank you guys for taking some time. You guys are absolutely the best and the brightest. Your passion, your efforts, you know, what you're doing in town means a lot to Charleston. If you ever get down here, get to Graf's on King Street or get up to Stems and Skin. Is it North Circle?
North Park Circle.
Get up there. So I want to thank Femi Oyedarin from Graf, Miles White from Graf, and Matt Tunstall. From Stems and Skins for joining us. Congratulations, Matt, for
Thank
his
you.
James Beard
Big ups.
Nomination.
And new restaurant in like 3 years. And
new
wow,
chef.
Oh, that's right.
Congratulations
man.
To you guys for
so
your 1 year anniversary.
That,
Matt's also opening
maybe
a restaurant.
Maybe he'll give you tips on how to get like a James Beard nomination, but I'll leave that between you three, all right?
Yeah.
Well, thank you and for your attention. For sure.
Listen, every time I come here, I'll be glad to have you guys on. Let me wrap this up. Thank you to Le Creuset and the Julia Child Foundation for making Heritage Radio Network on tour at Charleston Wine and Food possible. I'm Sam Ben Ruby from the Grape Nation on Heritage Radio Network. Heritage Radio Network is a member-supported nonprofit based in beautiful downtown Bushwick, Brooklyn. Listen to over 10,000 episodes of Food Radio podcasts and become a member at heritageradionetwork.org. And don't forget, we're going to be posting these shows on podcasts, so they'll be available at your, you know, leisure to listen to anytime, you know, on the road with Heritage Radio Network. So again, thank you guys for coming in. Great show.
Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network, food radio supported by you. For our freshest content and to hear about exclusive events, subscribe to our newsletter. Enter your email at the bottom of our website, heritageradionetwork.org. Connect with us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at @heritage_radio. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization driving conversations to make the world a better, fairer, more delicious place. And we couldn't do it without support from listeners like you. Want to be a part of the food world's most innovative community? Rate the shows you like, tell your friends, and please join our community by becoming a member. Just click on the beating heart at the top right of our homepage. Thanks for listening.